We're Australia's first national racial justice advocacy organisation led by people of colour, so led by impacted communities. We do three broad things. So the first thing we do is we run campaigns to tackle structural racism. The second thing we do is we hold political, corporate and cultural leaders to account on the things they say and do around race. And the third thing we do is we build a political constituency and the political voice of communities of colour.
Tell us about yourself and the other founding members of the organisation.
So Democracy in Colour is a member-led organisation. So we're a grassroots led by our members. Our priorities, our strategic direction is decided on our members. We have a core team of volunteers who are stewards of the vision that our members set out. And there are about 40 of them around the country. And we're a mix of different campaigners, creatives, union leaders, policy people, communicators. We've got decades of experience creating social change between us. We're all people of colour. So that's the unique thing about Democracy in Colour, is that we're led by and comprised entirely of people who identify as being people of colour. So a little bit about me. I grew up in Brisbane. My mum's Chinese, my dad's Italian. I grew up hearing the stories of my parents and the racism they experienced. And that has been a driving motivation behind being involved in this organisation, because for me and for everybody else in this organisation and for probably every person of colour in this country, racism is a very personal issue for themselves, for their families, for their friends. And that's why it's so important, I believe, that we're seeing a racial justice organisation actually led by the communities that are most affected by the issues they work on.
Racism can bear different facets. There's overt racism, covert racism. There are what we call unconscious biases. How are you going to tackle these different facets of racism?
Well, they're definitely big issues. And the thing about structural racism and institutionalized racism, that it's often invisible. It's often every day. And it can often be very, very difficult to tackle because it is so deeply embedded in our structure. So I think there are a number of different ways we can go about tackling these issues. I think there's short-term and long-term strategies, and there's political and cultural change strategies. I think we can definitely start by fighting back against the perverse form of politics that's taken rise over the last couple of years, a type of politics that seeks to weaponize our differences, a type of politics that's contingent on chronic fear, that's contingent on convincing people who have been screwed over by a system that they're being screwed over not by the rules and by a system of concentrated power that prioritises profit over life, but they're being screwed over by their neighbour that doesn't look like them. So communities of colour, people of colour have been a convenient scapegoat for political con artists, for merchants of fear, for false prophets who want to tell people who are suffering under a political and economic system that has never been about them, that has never been designed to work for them.
When you speak about weaponizing our differences, differences of peoples of color, give us an example of a situation where the differences are weaponized.
I think the whole existence, for example, of or the second reiteration and resurgence of One Nation is a great example of that, where we've got a political party that is going to people who are seeing diminishing economic prospects for themselves and their families and telling these people, participating in the unconscionable manipulation of people looking for answers and telling these people that the answer is immigration, is migrants, is Muslims. This is a political party whose leader has compared Muslims to dangerous dogs. This is a political party that wants to restrict immigration, wants to ban Muslim immigration, wants to ban the burqa, wants to withdraw Australia as a signatory to the Refugee Convention. That's a perfect example, I think, of very switched-on and savvy political operatives who are using people's fear, people's hatred, using division and distraction to play a cruel and perverse game where we're all pawns on Hanson's chessboard and we're being moved around and manipulated, and the only person that wins is her and her political party.
That's one example from a political party. Any example from the leadership, political leadership, those in power?
I think there have been plenty of examples from our government all across the board. I mean, earlier this year, we saw the government of the day, the coalition, enter into a preference deal with One Nation for the Western Australian state election. This was a preference deal that could have potentially given One Nation in WA a balanced power position, could have given them a very, very powerful position in the WA state parliament. When justifying this decision, Industry Minister Arthur Sinodinos said on national TV that he believed that One Nation had become more sophisticated, that they'd evolved. This is the same political party that in 1996, in Pauline Hanson's maiden speech said that this country was in danger of being swamped by Asians. So the rhetoric is the same, the target has shifted, the policies are the same, if not more extreme. That's a perfect example of our political leaders who are apparently in some sort of position of power and responsibility, completely abrogating that responsibility, completely abrogating any sort of commitment to good public policy and decent political discourse in a pursuit for power. When they see there's a great trend. Another example is when you see the polls going down, the number of national security announcements go up. We saw this week our Prime Minister announce changes to the deployment of our Defence Force in front of masked Special Forces soldiers. This is not about national security. This is about Malcolm Turnbull and the coalition are down in the polls. So let's capitalise on people's fears. Let's bring up the spectre of national security, of terrorism. And there's something quite evil about a politics that's contingent on chronic fear. And that's the type of politics that Malcolm Turnbull, that Peter Dutton, that Corey Bernardi, that George Christensen, that everybody in One Nation and more are playing.
That's just on a political level. Now, on a more day-to-day level, on a level that concerns all of us, when you look at the indigenous, the First Nations people of this country, there is a huge, there are gaps. We can't even say about one gap. It's gaps in every social and political aspect, socioeconomic and political aspect, in rates of imprisonment, workforce participation, so many issues there. And there are also other emerging communities like the migrants from the Middle East or even Africa. Accessing the workforce is one of the issues where there is a very insidious and unspoken discrimination.
Yes.
Because it's, well, corporations will say we hire based on the qualifications and the skills. And yet we know there are research, there is a lot of data demonstrating there's what we call unconscious biases in recruitment.
Yes.
Now, that's something that needs to be tackled. How are you going to address this kind of thing?
That is a very big issue. I think it does go back to our political discourse. I think everything stems from the type of rhetoric. I mean, we can't deal with these issues when we have the sort of disgusting rhetoric that comes out from our political, our cultural, and our corporate leaders on a weekly basis. If we're going to tackle something as structural as unconscious bias, if we're going to tackle something as structural as institutionalized racism, there's a lot there. And it's definitely not helped when we've got corporate leaders entering into debates around housing affordability, for example, and comparing and saying that housing affordability has been caused by immigration, like Dick Smith did. Or you've got a cultural leader who said late last year that we should be considering and implementing a ban on Muslim immigration, like Sonia Kruger did. It's not just in our political sphere, but when you've got political, corporate and cultural leaders saying on a weekly basis, it seems, that this other, creating this other and putting it up as a convenient punching bag for everything that's wrong in our society, of course that's going to feed into everyday racism. It's going to feed into more racially motivated attacks, verbal and physical. It's going to feed into employment discrimination. It's going to feed into hampering your employment prospects if you're a person of colour. It's going to feed into every aspect of your life.